My name is Adrian Lester.
I'm Joanna Scanlon.
Terry Minot.
Bronagh Taggart.
John Joe Neal.
Sarah Ball.
Tom Riley.
Kate Fleetwood.
John Heffernan.
And I'm Jonathan Harden. And very, very soon, you'll be listening to a brand new series of the Honest Actors podcast. So, series 3, 13 brand new episodes will be with you this side of Christmas 2018. Keep an ear out. I can guarantee that the people you've just heard speak will be part of that series. No surprises there. There will also be a few more surprises that I can't yet talk about. So keep an ear out. It's coming your way very, very soon. In the meantime, though, I've been keeping busy. It's TUC Young Workers Month this November, and every November, actually. And as part of that, I've gone back and spoken to the emerging actors and also recorded a special live podcast for Equity. You may remember that 2 years ago, I had a roundtable discussion in the spotlight with 7 emerging actors. That video went online on YouTube. It's still there. If you haven't already seen it, just search for Emerging Actors Roundtable and it should be results number 1 and 2. Anyway, I went back, met up with all the guys 2 years later. So all I wanted to find out was what had happened in those intervening 24 months. How had their careers gone in terms of what their expectations had been? And also what they'd learned along the way, if they had any wisdom to pass on to people who might be in a similar situation or even slightly further back in terms of their career. So have a listen. I found it absolutely fascinating. I hope you will too. The live podcast we recorded last week at the New Diorama Theatre, it was hosted by Lorna Wallace Taylor and features Emily Barrington and Sean Biggerstaff. It's well worth a listen as well. For now though, here's another emerging actor.
My name is Jack Forsyth Noble, and you are listening to the Honest Actors podcast.
Can you remind us, 2 years is a long time, mm-hmm. Can you remind us where you were, what was going on, at what stage you were at the last time we spoke?
Yeah, I think I was in my first term of my postgrad at drama school, so I was right in the middle of it. And I think we were about to do Panto. Yeah.
I mean, you didn't mention that at the time.
Maybe not.
Cool. Last time we met, as I said, 2 years ago, a long time ago, a lot has happened for everybody that was involved, I think. Certainly not least you. One of the things that came up whenever we discussed what it is you wanted that 2 years to bring.
Yeah.
Everyone obviously has aspirations for their life, for their career. And one of the things that you admitted to the first time we spoke was that you were struggling to get seen for good work. Those were your own words.
Yeah.
And that you hoped doing that postgrad that you just talked about would somehow solve that or help you get past that. Do you feel like that's still the case?
In some ways, yeah. Definitely, I still don't have access to the people that I feel will give me entrance to a room, if that makes sense. But also what I have got is way more of a sense of how to contact those people myself, and which is something I definitely learned through drama school, was having the initiative to go out and seek it yourself and show your worth in whatever way that is.
One of the things in the application that you talked about just in relation to that was your fear that you would be spending £20,000 and still not be taken seriously.
Right.
That's obviously, being taken seriously is slightly different to getting access to the room for big jobs.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're being taken seriously on the back of training?
Yeah, I think definitely to have a drama school on your CV changes things massively. Like you, whether it's right or wrong, you are perceived as having a qualification as an actor, whereas if you're approaching it without going to drama school, to some extent I'd say there is still a bit of an attitude towards that, changing, but still there, I'd say.
I think in terms of the group dynamic last time, I've just chatted to Paul and we agreed that he was probably the cynic in the room.
Right.
He felt most cynical about his own career. Mm. And also felt that everyone else possibly had a bit of rose-tinted glasses or a bit of over-optimism. I think you sat somewhere in the middle. You were kind of very much in both camps at times.
Yeah.
Do you think you've got more optimistic about what lies ahead in the intervening years?
I think that I've kind of realised you have to be realistic about the way it all works and the difficulties of it. But if you don't have that belief, that optimism, there's no point in doing it, because you will just get run down in your own negativity, I suppose. So you have to be aware of the reality, but also have optimism, because it affects the way you live your life on a daily basis, which affects your work.
We chatted at the end about would you still be doing this in 10 years? And one of the questions that also came up was, do you ever think you get to the point where you will survive by acting alone? And I think you said that didn't matter, that you kind of expected not to ever be able to do that, or that was a possibility and that was one you were kind of fine with, right?
Yeah.
Do you still feel like that reflects how you feel? And also, are you there yet? Have you got to the point where you're surviving by acting alone?
Not acting alone, but to some extent, some of my income is from acting, and that it seems to increase every year, which is nice. I don't know if I'd be happy by making money not off acting forever. I think that maybe is a slightly optimistic thing to say. But I understand that there's times where you need to do other work and there's times where you don't. Obviously, ideally, we will get to a level where you don't have to do that other work, but I'm happy to do it as long as it allows me to do the acting work.
This is going to seem slightly unfair. When I pressed the button to cease the recording with Paul, he said he felt like, a bit like he'd been attacked by Paxman. I feel like that was unfair. But I mean, I went through the applications and to be part of the roundtable, I should say. And I obviously watched the roundtable again and the little chats we had. And one of the things that struck me on everybody's part was that thing about how much you expected to make in your first year. And you were in the fairly common, half the group agreed with you on this, they felt the same, but you had felt like you might make £6,000 to £9,000 a year in your first year. Now, I'm not going to ask you to put a figure on it. I'm just going to ask, did you kind of get round there? Is that where things were sitting for you? If you don't want to discuss it, that's fine, but I feel like those are things people might want to know in a similar situation to you, because these are the things we don't talk about necessarily.
Yeah, definitely. Was within that bracket that I said, if not slightly above, actually, which is pretty good going.
Yeah, I think that's probably includes in that bracket the average annual earnings for an actor in the UK.
Really, right.
Yes, I think it's about £9,000 is the average.
Yeah.
But obviously that's overinflated by the very, very few big earners.
Yes.
So it's probably in real terms, if you discounted the top 5%, it's probably, I'd say, a lot lower.
Yeah.
Okay, so online, we had I asked people to suggest questions, and I also asked the rest of the group to suggest questions, and I got some back, which is always good. I'm going to ask those now. There may be less of a flow to this. It may seem a bit more like quickfire, but let's see where we are. You had an agent before. You'd worked before, right?
Before drama school, yeah.
You went back to drama school in order to try and, I suppose, improve your brand as much as to learn, right?
Yeah.
Do you have a better agent now?
After a year of being with an agent that wasn't right, I've just changed to what I think is a better agent now.
And how did that come about?
Through a friend who is with them, suggested I get in touch. I got in touch and met the agent, and then they came to see a show, and kind of pretty standard way of doing it, I think.
But within that, and then being a better agent, within that, you also have already referenced the fact that you kind of self-represent in some regards, so you have to go out and seek the work. What kind of things do you do in order to support the agent in their work?
So I I'm on Mandy, so I go through everything that comes through on Mandy and submit myself to stuff on there. I'll go through as much as I can, everything that comes through on Spotlight, and if I'm seeing something that I think I should be submitted for, some agents have the nudge facility on Spotlight, so you can nudge your agent if you want to be submitted for something, or you just let them know that you want to be submitted for that. So knowing what's coming through, I think, is a really big part of being proactive. And then also getting to know companies and directors and casting directors and stuff like that, doing your research so that...
How confident would you be if I was to list 6 theatres in London? How confident are you that you would know who the artistic director is?
Not that confident, because what I found is that the names that stick with me are the people that I come into interaction with, if that makes sense. And obviously that grows as
you can relax
more.
By the way, I'm not going to do that. I did reach over here. That was partly a fake. Right, okay. I don't have a list. But I could see the panic in your eyes. Do you think those things are important?
Yeah, I guess so.
Do you think you should, you should know those things?
Yeah, I'd say so. But it's just the way my brain works. I need something to hold on to that name. If I hear a name, I need something to attach it to, if that makes sense.
Do you read reviews, Guardian, yeah. Theatre column? Do you read The Stage?
Yeah, a bit, yeah. Probably more The Guardian than The Stage.
Yeah. So you do a bit of kind of general research around things.
Yeah.
How do you build relationships then, going beyond work? Are you the kind of person that stays in touch with people you've worked? I mean, directors rather than actors.
I think I don't like email every director I've worked with every 3 months or anything like that. But the ones that you kind of have a...
Hey, man.
Yeah.
Still not working.
Yeah, exactly. But like the ones that you bounce off or whatever, I think definitely keep that relationship going.
And what about social media? Are you on there?
Yep, definitely.
Do you use it for work?
Yes, yep.
Does your social media presence reflect the reality of your working life or a elevated version of it?
Probably an elevated version of it. I won't post if I'm not working, so I only post when I'm working. Which sometimes means there's gaps in my social media postings, but...
Now you've said that, everyone knows.
Yeah.
So do you look at other people's social media when they're working?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you find that has an impact upon your mood? If you see someone, say, you trained with, or someone mm-hmm. who you know from before that, or from other jobs, and you see that they're working, is that inclined to put a dampener on your day?
Not that they're working. I think there's... A range of ways in which people deliver their news, their acting news, and if someone is just keeping a diary on social media, that's cool. Someone's literally like, I'm doing great constantly, then that's irritating.
Has being an actor generally, do you think, had an impact on your mental health for good or for bad?
Both, I'd say, yeah, it definitely has had an impact. And when it's good, it's the best you are, and then when it's bad, it's really bad, for sure.
And does it have an impact upon relationships, personal,
yeah,
family?
100%.
How?
A lot of it is about a confidence thing and learning not to attach who your confidence in yourself as a person to how successful you are is like a journey that I'm on or whatever. And if you're not on the good side of that, it can affect how you relate to people on a daily basis.
So the fact that we're talking about this, and I didn't ask you a question about personal relationships and finances and mental health, and you aren't yet in tears, either means you've compartmentalized it to the point where when you leave this room and you're next on your own, you will. Or you've developed some coping mechanisms and some strategies over the past 2 years and in the time before that. Both as an actor and as a human being, right? What are the things you've learned over the past 2 years to help you in that regard specifically? So coping with rejection, coping with irregular working patterns, all of that stuff. Yeah. How do you cope with that better now than 2 years ago, if at all?
I think I'm more aware of it than I was 2 years ago, so I'm self-analysing more, not necessarily in a bad way, but also I think I've learned to dismiss things and move on and keep myself, but there's always something to do, if that makes sense, without being obsessive and constantly needing to do something. You can always research something, or you can always find out about a show or find out about a director and look them up and write to them if you think it's the right thing to do or whatever. So rather than getting sad because I didn't get audition, I try, and I'm not always successful, to get myself back out into looking what's out there.
What has been the big lessons then, generally, not just about, you know, keeping positive or keeping moving? Generally, have there been any other lessons?
To do it yourself, to go to something that you're not necessarily the right age, or you've just missed the age bracket, whatever. Or if your agent isn't submitting you, write to them directly to just have that initiative. Sometimes it doesn't work, but sometimes it does work, if that makes sense.
Mm. So what are you still struggling with then? If those are the lessons, those are the things that you're starting to have coping mechanisms for, or strategies, or things that you've learned, what are the things that, with regard to being an actor, you still find difficult?
Well, there's still gatekeepers that impact how I can progress in my career, and I still don't know those gatekeepers. So I'm slowly climbing, but I'm not going through those gates that I want to be going through.
And why do you think that is?
The whole plethora of reasons, I guess, but not having an agent that has access to those people is a big part of it, because that's part of what an agent is supposed to do, is get you into a room with these people, and if they can't do that, it's even harder for you know, some one actor in a million actors to get that access to.
And how do you see yourself? I mean, this is kind of, how do you see yourself in the industry in terms of your place? Are you pleased with where you are in respect of where you wanted to be 2 years ago? Are you doing slightly better or slightly worse? Like, where do you think you've got to in terms of where you aspired to be,
yeah,
and where you actually are?
Well, I think that everyone goes through drama school, and they leave drama school thinking that they're going to be the one to break the mold and that they're going to be the one that makes it or whatever. So considering that, and the other end of that, which is not to have worked since I left drama school, I'm really happy with where I am.
So that implies there are people doing better than you who left from your drama school?
Not necessarily. But I mean more in terms of what I consider success for myself in my career.
That was unfair of me. So we talked a lot about last time about whether people felt like they would ever get to the point where acting would be their only source of income and they could survive by acting alone. You still do other jobs. Do you find it difficult to balance that, or have you hit upon something that works?
Not one thing that works now. I do a bunch of different things, but I've just decided that is not worth missing out on acting opportunities. So I quite often will have to not go back to a job or whatever because I've had to cancel last minute or whatever. So there's no one, I haven't fixed that problem yet.
You may never fix that problem. I may never fix that problem. Lots of us don't.
But so, I think people, like, if you have other skills, I don't know, if you're into computers or whatever, just do a side business, because it seems to be what works for a lot of people.
It's the great lie, isn't it, that the people who we think survive by acting alone often don't.
Yeah.
And by that I mean, and I had this conversation with Joanna Scanlon this week, who I was interviewing for the podcast, and talking about actors who, when you see them on TV and on stage at the RSC and the National, you think, well, of course, this is their only income. And then you find out they run a catering company.
Yeah, yeah.
Or bought six houses in Pimlico in the 80s. Or, you know, there are people who have florist businesses that they never talk about. Why would they?
Or whenever a garlic farm.
You know, all this weird and wonderful stuff. And part of the problem is because they never talk about it, our aspirations as people who aren't at the point where we can survive by acting alone are in some way skewed by a falsehood.
Exactly.
They are skewed by the fact of our information is limited and we're basing our aspirations on a lie that exists for even fewer people than we think it does.
Totally.
So what are you going to do with that? What's your business plan?
I don't know. I'm thinking about it, but I haven't had any strokes of genius yet.
You're open to suggestions
absolutely,
and offers.
Absolutely, and funding.
At Jay Noble on Twitter, if you have a business idea. So if I was to sit here with you in 2 years' time, what do you think are the chances that you'll still be acting? Not to 100%.
Yeah, it's got to be 100.
And what do you think are the chances that you'll be surviving by acting alone?
I don't know, maybe 20%.
And what would you like to be sitting telling me in 2 years? I don't mean in cloud cuckoo, blue sky, you know, positive thinking kind of world. Mm. I mean, in very real terms, last time you wanted to be taken more seriously.
Mm.
What do you want to be saying in 2 years you've achieved?
I guess like a good balance of career progression and that working with the rest of life, I guess.
So it's more of a personal goal, really, that than a career one.
Yeah.
Because one would say, if you haven't worked at all, but you're happy in your personal life, then you've succeeded in that goal.
Well, but you need the career progression in there, so I think, because I won't be happy.
So how will you judge the career? How will you judge the career progression?
To work, not necessarily more, but to continue working on a yearly basis, if that makes sense. So I don't want to. I would freak out if I went for more than 6 or 7 months without working. I know.
I think we all do. I think sometimes we all freak out 6 or 7 days or weeks or months before a job finishes.
No, absolutely.
So you want a more, is it more consistent, higher quality, which is more important, the regularity or the quality?
Yeah, it's the quality. But the regularity is also important, because or else my mental health goes up and down a lot.
When we talked last time, you said you'd made yourself start to say that you were an actor.
I'd made myself say it.
Yeah. You'd made yourself kind of say it and say it without equivocation.
Yes. And I do that now without thinking about it.
I was going to ask that. Have you moved on beyond the kind of consciously not objecting to your own acting?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, definitely within the industry, it's different when you're around family. But yeah. For sure.
So what's different around family? Like, let's say we're in the Noble family household around Christmas. The Forsyth Nobles are gathered around.
They don't have an understanding of how the industry works. So I think it's spoken about quite a lot these days. But if you're not acting on television, you're not really an actor. You're an aspiring actor or whatever.
Semi-professional.
Yeah, exactly. So it's difficult to measure what a professional actor or a successful actor is for someone that's not in that world.
Are you successful?
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Over the course of the past 2 years, have you at any point seriously or momentarily considered giving up?
Momentarily, but not seriously.
For what reason?
Just occasionally thought, is there anything else that I'm good at that I could do? And then I've realised that, no, there's not. So better crack on.
Well, that kind of puts pay to the whole having a business on the side idea, then,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah.
Unless your business on the side is acting. I'm an actor with a side of acting.
Yeah. But I don't know, like, there's nothing else that I'm as good at. Maybe there's other things that I'm okay at, but that's what I...
Okay. Yeah. If in 2 years you're not working at a higher level and you're not working more consistently, or let's say in 5 years' time that you've gone through a period not of 7 months or 6 months, but of, say, 2 years and you haven't worked, do you think there's a sense you have of a cutoff of something that would make you give up? Do you know what that might be at this point?
Not really for me, because I've always made it work however I could for me, but in being in a relationship, you're no longer just looking after what your interests are. You have to find balance with someone else's interests. So for me, that's never a cutoff, but then working with someone else, there may be times where we have to have conversations about, whereas on my own, I wouldn't have a conversation about cutting it off.
It'd be weird to have a conversation on your own, in fairness, but I guess I know what you mean. So that's kind of, I think, pretty much a lot of what I wanted to talk about covered. Is there anything you're particularly interested in with the rest of the group, like in terms of the impressions you took away on that night of where everyone else was and where you sat within that? Is there anything you're interested to see from the others?
I think it's been spoken about in general more, but I am interested to know how other actors and, you know, these guys cope with the mental health side of it, because it is a bit of a ride, and the more you talk about it to other people, the less it seems like isolating. So I think that's what I'd be interested to know.
I shall ask him.
Thank you.
But then you knew I was going to ask him anyway. So to round off, it's not entirely fair, but I ask it of everyone, and I'm not going to make a special exception for you guys. Are you in anything at the minute?
I'm not.
You were about to say, I've just finished something, weren't you?
I was, yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know.
But then I was being honest, so.
Yeah. Thank you. Listen, it's been a pleasure catching up. I really appreciate you coming in to chat. And I look forward to finding out about your garlic farm in 2 years. Thanks, yeah, man.
Sorted. Thank you.
And that's it for another Emerging Actors Chat. 6 more of those are available this very day on this very same podcast outlet. But before I let you go and listen to those, I have some thank yous. Thank you to Jennifer Kay and Louise Waller, the assistant producers on this. Thank you also to Theatre Deli and 1984 Personal Management, in whose spaces I recorded the interviews. Theatre Deli, you can follow on Twitter at Theatre Deli. You can also find out more about what they do at theatredeli.co.uk. So thanks to both Theatre Deli and 1984, to Louise and to Jennifer. And don't forget, Series 3 is coming your way very soon. Make sure you're automatically set up to download it. And there's also a live podcast event for TUC Young Workers Month in association with Equity that's also available this very day. The guests on that, Emily Barrington and Sean Biggerstaff, it's well worth a listen. Have a go. Anyway, I'll speak to you soon when Series 3 is out. Take care of yourself. Speak to you soon.